It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Killer gets life in Ahwatukee slayings, Arizona's budget battle exasperated Kyrene officials, Ahwatukee teen wins congressional medal for achievements, Desert Vista yoga teacher plans a wellness expedition, and new permit requirement for events with 30 or more people at Tempe City Parks. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Killer gets life in Ahwatukee slayings by Paul Mariniak. In the long run, Chase Scott Christman couldn't find the evidence linking him to the brutal slaying of two men and a woman in an Ahwatukee apartment nearly a year ago. The Mesa man's texts, his blood, digital evidence given up by his cell phone, and some of his initial statements to Phoenix homicide detectives convincingly connected him to the July 14th slayings of Marissa Honeycutt, 27, Anthony Fredrickson Seccarelli, 25, and Samuel Lott, 37. Last week, Christman, 32, received three consecutive life sentences for his guilty plea in April to three counts of first-degree murder and three counts of armed robbery in the case. The victims' bodies were discovered around 7 a.m. July 15th in the master bedroom of a second-floor unit of the Array at South Mountain Apartments on South 48th Street near Warner Road, after firefighters had answered a neighbor's report of smoke. While the fire didn't amount to much, the bloody scene that Christman tried to cover up by setting the blaze was horrifying. Fredrickson Seccarelli had been shot in the head. Lott had three stab wounds in the neck and a gunshot wound in the shoulder. Honeycutt was stabbed 29 times in the head, torso, and limbs. All that carnage resulted from a $300 drug deal gone bad. Phoenix detectives relatively quickly unraveled the case, arresting Christman 4 days after his victims were discovered. County Attorney Rachel Mitchell praised the detectives' work, noting this was a particularly vicious act with one victim being stabbed nearly 30 times. This defendant tried to cover his tracks by setting the crime scene on fire. Christman arguably simplified the detectives' work. Chase was confronted with the presence of his blood on the interior of the front door to his apartment and his cellular device location showing he was there, detectives said in the arrest affidavit, though Chase stated the cuts on his hands are from when he fell on his skateboard. It said detectives didn't find a skateboard in his apartment, but did find a gun. Further linking him to the crime were extensive texts between Christman and one of the victims. Lott listed himself on his Facebook page as an Oklahoma resident who lived in Mesa and owned SNL Sports Cards and Trading, which was not registered with the State Corporation Commission and did not appear to have a physical address. Fredrickson Seccarelli lived in the apartment, and it was unclear if Honeycutt lived with him. The deadly chain of events that led to the slayings began prior to Christman's arrival at the apartment just after midnight on July 14th. Chase would buy drugs from the victims and owed money to them, detective affidavits said. Police found extensive texting on Fredrickson Seccarelli's phone in which he and Christman negotiated a drug deal, though the victim was concerned about an unpaid debt the killer owed Lott. Those texts showed that while Fredrickson Seccarelli told Christman he was weighing $300 of an unnamed drug, he wanted to know if the suspect would pay Lott a $540 debt. Chase said he is hurting financially, the affidavit said, paraphrasing one of the texts. Police said other cell phone evidence suggests Christman arrived at the apartment shortly after midnight, July 14th, stayed until around 3 a.m., then returned around 8 p.m. that same day and stayed until 6 a.m. July 15th, less than an hour before smoke from the fire he set triggered neighbors' calls to the fire department. The affidavit indicated it took no more than 2 hours of interrogation before police caught Christman in a series of lies about his whereabouts July 14th. Initially, the affidavit said, Chase denied knowing where their apartment was and stated he had never been there. But detectives confronted him with pings from his cell phone that placed him at the murder scene. A second man, Dorian Rice, also is accused of 3 counts of murder to driving Chrisman to the apartment complex the first time. He is currently awaiting trial. Chrisman was convicted in a California conviction in 2013 on charges related to his participation in a riot in downtown Huntington Beach on July 28, 2013, that followed the conclusion of a weekend surfing and skateboarding competition. He and 8 other people were arrested in a melee in which rioters broke store windows and doors using a stop sign as a battering ram. He pleaded guilty in October of 2013 in Orange County to vandalism, incitement to riot, and refusal to disperse upon lawful command. He was sentenced to 3 years probation and 80 hours of community service. His driver's license was suspended for a year, and he was ordered to pay about $4,800 in restitution. A student at Northern Arizona University, at least from 2011 to 2015, he also lists himself on LinkedIn a second time as a student there from 2011 to present. Chrisman also piled up a series of other charges in Arizona on charges ranging from speeding and felony theft to underage drinking and criminal trespassing. In a YouTube video he posted 9 years ago, Chrisman recited a rap song he made that said referenced his past struggles with drugs. Introducing his song, he said, "A few days ago, I wrote this new track. It's about them while I was using drugs, hitting my rock bottom, and today being clean, and I've been performing at the meetings I've been going to lately. A lot of people have been saying good things about it, and it's really inspiring, so I put it on Facebook. I'm not going to add a beat to it because it's a more powerful coming from the heart and being a cappella, but I hope you guys like it." One of his Facebook accounts and his YouTube channel contain several rap songs by recording artists, though his own work does not appear. While 2 of the slain victims had little social media presence, Lott posted frequently on Facebook and early in 2024 had written several posts expressing his grief over the fentanyl-related overdose death of his younger brother on December 28, 2023. He had some of his closest friends pass away, and it really messed him up, but especially his old girlfriend Jessica, that died in front of him at the house, he wrote on one post, and it took him to a very dark place in his life. The drugs and alcohol consumed him for a very long time, Lott wrote, saying his brother was trying to mask and drown the pain and never actually sought help for it. That was Killer Gets Life in Ahwatukee Slayings. Our next article, Arizona's Budget Battle Exasperated Kyrene Officials, by Paul Mariniak. Working in the threat of a state government shutdown early last week, the Kyrene and Tempe Union governing boards took radically different postures in approving tentative budgets for the fiscal year that begins Tuesday. The Tempe Union Governing Board on June 25th voted unanimously to approve its tentative budget with neither comment nor even an administration presentation of what the spending plan looks like amid a budget battle in the state capitol that left some big fiscal questions unanswered for all school districts. The day before the Tempe Union vote, the Kyrene Governing Board also approved a tentative spending plan. Days after the 2 board meetings, the state budget uncertainties were resolved after the state house lost a battle to advance a smaller budget than the one Governor Katie Hobbs and Senate Republicans agreed to. Hobbs signed the budget she and Senate Republicans had agreed to with very few last-minute changes. But a couple Kyrene board members had plenty to say after a doleful presentation of their district's tentative 2025-26 budget by Assistant Superintendent Chief Financial Officer Chris Herman, who for the 2nd consecutive meeting reminded the board of all the uncertainties that existed at the time at the state capitol. "The final finish line, basically, for our budget this year is a little unique as far as where we stand, because our state has not passed a budget," Herman said, adding that the biggest estimate relates to an increase for state inflation funding. "That increase is required under statute to happen every year," he continued. "But because our state hasn't passed a budget, technically that money has not been appropriated, if that makes any sense. So they're obligated, based on statute, to provide that. We've assumed that will happen according to the guidance that we've been given for what to expect. But again, because the state has not technically passed a budget, those numbers are still estimates. I can't predict what will happen in the next week, Herman said. It's hard to predict how this will all turn out. Some Kyrene board members voiced their exasperation. Board member Bunny Davis paraphrased the poet John Milton, telling Herman, "You are serving by waiting. As Milton said, those only serve who also sit and wait." But Davis then asked if there was anything we had as a board might be able to discuss and have some effect on this process. Board President Kevin Walsh answered, "I think Mr. Herman consistently demonstrates more grace in referring to the legislature than I'm capable of. I know he says this is an unusual circumstance," Walsh continued. "It's unusual in that we've never had a government shutdown, and it looks like we might be flirting with that," he said. "But it's not usual that Mr. Herman is being asked to put together a budget with basically no insight as to how that's going to come out from the state until the 11th hour. And it's probably not the 11th hour. It's the 11th hour and 59th minute and 58th second. So consistently, he's finding himself in this position," he continued. "We're not unique. It's not just Kyrene, but every public school." "It's not just public schools," Walsh said, noting nonprofits and other state fund recipients face the same predicament. "We're all left in this limbo," he railed. "For my part, I think the only way we can really speak is to speak at the ballot box. But, you know, I don't know if there's anything else that we can do as a district other than what we continue to do every year, which is plan for the worst and hope for the best." Davis agreed, praising the job Superintendent Laura Tonyes and Herman have done in figuring out a $112.5 million general fund budget, as well as about $110 million in capital, bond debt, and other spending. But she said that while staff is doing incredible work to keep Kyrene as a leader in education in the state, she would like to see the board figure out something we can do as a board to support legal action. "I don't mean, sure, the legislature, but just figure out ways that we can actively, conspicuously support your work, whether it's engaging our parent groups to start to advocate directly for us and for their kids," she told Tonyes and Herman. "I would love to figure out if there's a role that we can play to help you guys out," Davis added. Walsh said that the board could further discuss that issue at its next retreat, July 15th. Both Kyrene and Tempe Union confront reductions in per-pupil basic state funding as a result of enrollment loss. Kyrene faces a projected loss of 761 students, costing $4.1 million in basic state subsidy, while Tempe Union's projected 3% loss, roughly 393 students, will cost about $1.8 million in per-pupil allotment. Tempe Union spokeswoman Megan Sterling noted that the district already planned for that loss by eliminating 69 positions, mostly district-level staff, in the coming fiscal year. She also said there was no need for another budget presentation last week since Roland Carnazza, Assistant Superintendent for Business Services, had given presentations at three earlier meetings. All districts need to finalize their 2025-26 budgets by mid-July. Kyrene's board will hold a public hearing and a budget adoption vote on July 8th, while Tempe Union's board will do the same on July 9th. That was Arizona's budget battle exasperated Kyrene officials. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Ahwatukee teen wins Congressional Medal for Achievements by AFN News staff. An Ahwatukee teen has earned the U.S. Congressional Silver Medal for his community service, personal development, and physical fitness. William Steenkin, a rising sophomore at Tempe Prep, logged 240 volunteer hours, over 130 hours of personal development, and more than 200 hours of personal fitness during his freshman year. The Congressional Award is a national program that encourages young people to set and achieve goals in four areas: voluntary public service, personal development, physical fitness, and expedition/exploration. William's commitment to these areas has earned him this highly regarded recognition, which honors youth who make significant contributions to their communities while also demonstrating leadership and growth, a spokeswoman said. The 15-year-old son of Agata and Will Steenken, William is a member of Ahwatukee Boy Scout Troop 278. His volunteer efforts included Boy Scouts and Order of the Arrow, Honor Society of Scouting. William volunteered in facility and trail maintenance at local Boy Scout camps during multiple events at Herd Pueblo and Camp Geronimo, as well as at Philmont Scout Ranch in New Mexico. He also volunteered at various events for younger Cub Scouts, teaching them various outdoor skills. Eagle Scout Project. He led a complete remodel of a courtyard at Tempe Preparatory Academy, overseeing the removal of trees, the installation of irrigation, the planting of bushes, and the installation of artificial turf and sun sails. Volunteering at community events such as the Tukey Turkey Trot, Light Up Ahwatukee, refurbishing bikes for children in foster care through Recycle Your Bicycle, and packing meals for global distribution at Feed My Starving Children. William's personal development included participation in three different multi-day leadership programs, improving his math skills over the summer, earning multiple merit badges, and joining the school choir. He also made significant strides in physical fitness and stamina through strenuous hikes, regular workouts, and joining multiple school sport teams, including wrestling, swimming, and golf. A Congressional Award spokeswoman said he further demonstrated his commitment to exploration and cultural learning with a 5-day trip to Amsterdam and Poland, where he immersed himself in history, culture, and local customs of the region, she added. Karen Moffitt, Tempe Prep's Director of College Counseling, said William's recognition is a result of his hard work and dedication, both to his community and his own personal development. He exemplifies the values of leadership, service, and growth. William plans to earn the gold medal, the highest level of the Congressional Award, by the end of his sophomore year. His achievement serves as an inspiration to his peers and a testament to the impact that young people can make when they set goals and pursue them with dedication and perseverance, the spokeswoman said. That was Ahwatukee Teen Wins Congressional Medal for Achievements. Our next article, Desert Vista Yoga Teacher Plans a Wellness Expedition, by Paul Mariniak. In a time when teenagers are portrayed as more stressed than ever, it's probably a good idea for a high school to have someone like Amanda Goh on staff. Tempe Union didn't actually have that in mind when it hired Goh 23 years ago as a special education teacher at Desert Vista High School, long before digital devices became the scourge that drives a lot of that teen angst. I did that for about 8 years, she said, of special education, and then I moved to health and PE and started the yoga program. Over time, Goh became a highly skilled wellness educator, traditional Japanese Reiki master teacher, and yoga and meditation guide. Now, she said, she blends ancient healing traditions with modern movement science. Goh describes Reiki as a Japanese hands-on or hands-over technique for stress reduction and relaxation that allows healing on all levels. An ancient practice rediscovered in the early 1900s, Reiki is not tied to a religion or philosophy, but fosters deep relaxation and improves the body's own ability to heal and function, she said. With over a decade of experience in Reiki, yoga, and performance training, Goh said her passion is to educate and empower others to live more balanced, resilient, and healthy lives, contributing to a more conscious and compassionate world. She teaches three different levels of yoga for fitness and wellness and runs a high school yoga teacher training program. And she has devoted years to studying Reiki and yoga. After completing her undergraduate work at the University of Arizona, she went on to earn a master's degree in cross-categorical special education at the University of Phoenix. She then studied traditional Chinese medicine at the Institute of Chinese Medicine and Yoga and traditional Japanese Reiki at Southwest Institute of Healing Arts. At the Institute, she earned her Reiki 1, 2, and 3 and Master Teacher certifications under the mentorship of Lisa Salen. In 2016, she was initiated as a Usui Shiki Ryo Traditional Japanese Reiki Master Teacher and has since trained 76 Reiki 3 practitioners, helping others discover their healing potential. She also earned a master's degree in yoga studies from Loyola Marymount University in 2022. Her school project there utilized yoga therapy to improve collegiate and professional basketball players' overall performance, and her master's thesis was on rap and yoga as a means of expanding yoga's reach of wellness, specifically to address health issues rooted in generational trauma. A Yoga Alliance continuing education provider, she also founded a registered yoga school. Certified in Vinyasa Krama, Hatha Gong, she integrates breathwork, intelligent sequencing, and mindfulness into her work, offering what she calls a unique perspective to her students and athletes. With a strong background in physical education, Go holds an NFHS Strength and Conditioning Certificate and serves as an NSC First Aid, CPR, and AED instructor. And she describes her work with athletes as movers of all levels, as improving range of motion, cardiorespiratory strength, agility, balance, breath control, and mental focus. She's applied that knowledge to multiple sports, from track and field to ice hockey. For example, this summer, she will be working with the football teams at Desert Vista and Chandler High, as well as with professional athletes, though she also will be working with special needs adults. During the school year, she also is part of Tempe Union's Social Emotional Health Committee. All that training and study, she said, makes her rooted in empowerment, education, and embodiment, guiding individuals to awaken their inner healer, optimize performance, and thrive on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. She also stressed, "Exercise is great, but there's just so many more facets to yoga, with breathwork and mindfulness and meditation that just takes the body, especially strengthening the nervous system, to the next level." Still, her credentials haven't immunized her from cutbacks in Tempe Union, which, like many school districts, are faced to make painful decisions in the face of sliding enrollment and inflation that outdistances state support. Go lost a philosophy of wellness course she created and taught where students had the option to become certified in all three Reiki levels, though the third or master level requires significantly more time, practice, and dedication. I've had many people ask about the Reiki unit since the school year was the first year we did not offer it since it started in 2017. We would do our best to create a spa-like atmosphere and treat faculty, staff, and students who signed up for final practicums. We received excellent feedback every year. But out of that cutback, Go created an idea open to teens as well as adults who are interested in a once-in-a-lifetime wellness excursion. She calls her Transformational Wellness Journey Through Japan, December 21st through the 31st, the ultimate reset, and already has signed up 3 high school and 2 college students, as well as some adults, though registration remains open. For this trip, we are intentionally going to many important places connected to the development of Usui Shiki Ryo, traditional Japanese Reiki, Go said. She touts it as a trip where participants will be immersed in the healing energy of Japan, from the buzzing streets of Tokyo to serene temples of Kyoto, and promises a soul-nourishing experience designed to help people slow down, reconnect, and rise into 2026 with clarity, vitality, and purpose. We'll explore the ancient art of Reiki in its birthplace, deepening our connection to energy work and holistic well-being, she said, adding, it will mix daily yoga and spiritual practices with immersive cultural experiences, delicious cuisine, and Japan's breathtaking beauty. The land-based trip costs $5,110, and she is working with a flight consolidator to accommodate a discounted price for the group. The land price covers 3 hotels, daily guided excursions, 2 meals a day, and of course, yoga, meditation, and Reiki. Some of the landmarks that we're going to are really significant to the history of Japanese Reiki, Go added. We'll be very mindfully going to certain places, just so that people who are waiting to have some type of growth and transformation through everything, the yoga, the meditation, the Reiki, will hopefully feel a little bit more connected to it and understand a little bit more deeply. That was Desert Vista Yoga Teacher Plans a Wellness Expedition. And finally, from ABC 15, new permit requirement for events with 30 or more people at Tempe City Parks, by Ben Brown. The Tempe City Council has passed an ordinance that would require events with 30 or more people to have a permit and pay a $25 fee. It gives the city manager a lot of power, said Austin Davis, founder of the nonprofit AZ Hugs, which serves people who are homeless. You know, when we talk about checks and balances in every sense of government, this is an attack on those checks and balances. Davis was one of dozens of people who spoke at the council meeting last week in opposition to the ordinance, which lasted hours and went into the next morning. Parks should not be privatized, public spaces should not be weaponized against those most in need of shade and a safe space to simply exist without being arrested, Davis told ABC 15. But Mayor of Tempe, Corey Woods, said this ordinance is not about targeting any group, rather simplifying a decades-old law. Our ordinance before was written in 1967, and it was kind of a two-pronged process. You either have this tiny little Ramada reservation, or you have this big special event permit process, and not every park in our community could be reserved, so we needed to clean up that ordinance, Woods said. He added, the ordinance, which goes into effect beginning in August, would also allow the city to hold people accountable when it comes to leaving behind trash or debris at parks. The only thing that this is allowing us to do is to make sure that we know who's using these Ramadas at which time, or another one of these public spaces, Woods said. And obviously, if there's a situation where that group leaves trash behind or debris, or they break a piece of park equipment, that you, at least as a city, have some ability to hold people accountable. But Davis believes this ordinance gives the city too much power and will hurt the marginalized community. He is currently in the middle of a lawsuit with the city over its previous permitting requirements. The $25 fee increases to $50 if you do not live in the city and ranges from $150 to $3,500 for special event permits, depending on the size and scope of the event. That was new permit requirement for events with 30 or more people at Tempe City Parks. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.